Welcome to Word by Word, investigations into the world of writers, the books they create, and the conversations they generate. I'm your host, Jordan Rosenfeld. You've probably walked right past them hundreds of times and never even knew what they were. Their covers are often artful and enigmatic, their contents full of surprises. They are literary magazines, publications that have often arisen in the spirit of independence. They publish quality and often experimental fiction, but don't require the madcap world of New York publishing houses to do so. Some of them have even become coveted sources for new writers to publish in and vehicles to their success. On today's show, we'll speak to the editors of two such magazines, NFG, a Canadian-based international print magazine, and Night Train, a U.S. magazine, both hoping to contribute new, exciting voices to literature. NFG is an international print magazine published in Toronto, Canada, with staff and distribution throughout the world. The magazine features writing with attitude and doesn't believe in typecast genres. According to their website, artists make their own brand of fiction. The label has no importance if the story digs in, opens a new door, and twists your way of thinking. You try to forget, but you can't. The characters have become a part of you, the tale forever carved in your mind. I spoke recently with Cher O'Brien, founder and editor-in-chief of NFG Magazine. The magazine business is not known for being tremendously profitable, so I'd like to know what I would imagine is a higher purpose that inspired you to start NFG Magazine.
I have to say it was love. It certainly wasn't money. I'm going to test for that right now. It's the love of writing and helping out other writers, encouragement, because as a writer, everybody knows what it's like to be rejected a zillion times, or, you know, not find anybody to read your work. So, you know, being in a writing group is how it started off, and we were so good to each other and so honest, and it worked out really well. The idea just sprouted right from there. You know, too bad this wasn't a magazine and we were all doing this with stories, you know, critiquing other stories and reading and helping each other out, and then publishing the best. And then somebody said, why not? Now, I was, you know, talked out of it in the beginning, tried to anyways, from the amount of money it was going to take, the amount of years it was going to take to actually see profit. But we're still in. We're still hanging in year two.
Now, you're based in Canada, but your editors and, of course, your contributors are all over the world. So your intention was never to be a regional magazine.
Yes, yeah. Our first editing staff of six covered, you know, three different continents. And we wanted to eat the magazine and all of our stores where everybody lived, of the staff. So that was our main goal. Spread it out.
And is it difficult to run a magazine when most of your staff isn't even in the same country?
I think it's easier because we're online at all hours of the night. You know, I get up in the morning and the guy in England's just finishing his job and going home for the afternoon. Everybody seems to be online. You know, the Australian are, you know, good day ahead of us. So whenever somebody's sleeping, somebody's awake. It seems to be running constantly. I think if it was all centered in Toronto, it would take a lot longer and a lot more legwork.
Has your initial vision of the magazine been met? And if you want to talk a little bit about how you imagined it coming together, I would love to hear about that. But has the magazine played out as you expected it would?
Yeah, I think it has. We started out so small, but we're the exact same way we were when we started out, only we're, you know, three times as large. We have 35 staff now instead of six. We have four distributors instead of none. You know, we have lots of stores. It's lots of people submitting. We got a great word of mouth because people like to get feedback on their stories. I think I'm only surprised that it really worked. You know, I had a lot of doubts, like, is it going to work? Can we do it? That's the only surprise. But it is exactly the way it was when it started, small and tight and honest and a group of hardworking artists. It's exactly what it is, only larger.
Well, talk to me a little bit about the process, really, for the sake of people listening, of getting published in NFG, because it's a very unusual process compared to the traditional receive a, you know, pre-printed rejection letter in the mail or acceptance letter.
Right, yeah. Well, I think the reason we do it the way we do is because there's nobody in one particular office to open up all the mail. And this way, it's not just one person reading submissions coming in, it's, you know, a large group of editors that get a shot at it. So writer submits their story to the site, and it goes through what we call the slush, where a few people will look at it. One person will look at, you know, each one and decide whether it moves up for review for the rest of the group to read. And I'm going to guess 98% probably get turned back at the gates. And for that 2% that get through, they have, you know, upwards of 30 editors to read and vote. We usually get an average of about 10 on the really good stories because they hang in there. People, you know, more editors want to read it. The average sits up. So the editors read, and then we have a voting system that's kind of color coordinated. It just helps everybody out. It's like a traffic light. Green if they think it should be published, yellow if they think it needs work, and red if they don't think it should be published. And then they give it a vote between 1 and 10 on the merit of writing, the style, the characters, the plot, everything that goes with a really good story. And then those top stories are the ones that we discuss. And discussions can go on for months sometimes about which ones to purchase and which ones not to purchase, because there are a lot of really good stories, but what we're looking for is the great story. So, you know, we have these large discussions. Well, it can get, you know, a lot of heated because editors will fight for the ones they like. And then we make our decision and we put through the buy list, and then from there, everything goes is still online. There's editing, which is all done by the editors directly online. We let the artist know when it's finished. They go ahead and they check it. They give their approval. Everything is done right to the point of print, where the art director will pull everything offline and put it into a file for the printer. Everything is done directly online, and the artist can see as it's going through the comments. And, you know, I guess the longer it stays up there, they get the general idea. It's going to, you know, it's getting a lot better. More editors are reading it. They have a better shot. But so far we've gotten great reviews, I think, from the writers themselves. I don't think I've seen so many people rejected that email us and thank us. It stuns me all the time. Every time I see another email come through thanking us, I think, wow, you know, for a rejected artist, it's pretty good. Because I've only felt just utter rejection when I'm rejected.
Well, I think the difference is that, you know, that standard form letter you get saying, you know, thank you, your work isn't right for us, tells the writer nothing about why it isn't right. And it's a service you're providing to let the editors comment on the work.
Yeah, well, the most important thing, I think, is to know you've been read. I think as a writer, I just wanted to know I've been read. When I get the form letter of rejection back, I think, did anybody look at it? You know, did they read the first sentence and go, ah? Did they get bored halfway through? Was there too many adjectives? Like, what was it they didn't like? Even just a one-liner was all I really was asking for.
Well, how did you also make the decision to pay writers? Because obviously that's a big expense, and a lot of, you know, literary magazines pay only in copies. So I think this is clearly another service you offer, but how did you come to that decision?
Well, actually, I feel that we don't pay them enough. I look at all the other rates, and I feel cheap. I wish more than anything that's what we could do, is really pay them what they're worth. Because, I mean, it's a lot of work to write a story. You know, it's easy to think about it. It's easy to say you're going to do it. But to sit down and write it and see it to the end and send it out, it's a lot of work. And it's read by so many people and can be enjoyed by so many people. And the pay is so little. It's sad. You know, we've already raised the prices, and I think last November. And, you know, the minute we see any profit, that's the first thing I'm going to do is raise them again, just to bring them up to, you know, not just everybody else's level, but just a level I don't feel so cheap, you know, handing out such little amount of money for such a hard work.
What service do you think literary magazines offer writers and readers?
Well, besides entertainment.
Yes, besides entertainment.
Well, I guess from our point, our magazine, we can offer stories from people on other continents, other parts of the world that they would have never, you know, read about or heard about, or see how they, their style of writing, the way they talk, because we publish the exact words and phrases and spelling of the author's home country. So they get to see and read what it's like right from, directly from the author's own words. So I think, I read these stories and I can really see the English accent come out in a story, or the Australian. Or you can see, you know, the guy that writes a story from Texas, you can see his accent, his style come through. I just find that really interesting.
Would you also say, and I'm only going to I'm going to focus this down to the two countries involved here at the moment, which is, do you feel there's a different sensibility in the writing between Canadian writers and American writers?
I don't think so, but I have noticed a trend. The longer stories seem to come from the U.S., and the shorter stories seem to come from Canada. I don't know why. It's just a trend I've noticed lately. But style of writing and the way people write, it's really in your face lately. People don't seem to be frightened to write, you know, the dark side, or I'd say the dark side of human nature even.
Well, now, your tagline is writing with attitude. So would this fall into the category of attitude when you say people writing about the dark side? Is that sort of what you mean?
Yeah, like I guess being honest. You know, you'll always recognize a really honest story when you put it down and you think, I wonder if that's true. I wonder if that really happened to the author. Those kind of stories that they really ring a true bell about them.
Now, and you also offer quite a broad range of, well, I would say styles, as well as obviously you take poetry and articles and fiction, but I would say you've got speculative fiction in there, you've got some great literary fiction, some postmodern stuff.
Yeah, it's a really good mix. I think that comes from having a lot of people on staff with different tastes. You know, we've got a group that loves sci-fi, there's romance, there's people that write dark humor, there's people that write horror. There's such a large, diverse group. But you know, if the person who loves sci-fi read the romance and really liked it, that's a good story. That's something we can put into the mix, because we want everybody to read and at least find something they really enjoy. We want the reader that only reads romance to read the sci-fi and go, wow, it was really good.
So it doesn't bother you or your readers, it sounds like, that you don't have an umbrella sort of theme besides writing with attitude, that it doesn't have to... No.
I'm very happy to close on umbrella. I can't tell you how many times I pushed out stories myself as a writer, and they just came back, you know, not the right genre. You know, we don't have horror, and I thought, well, it's not really a horror story. You know, it'd be a mix, or, you know, I thought, where do you put these unusual stories? Or, you know, just, I guess, the research involved in trying to figure out, after you've written your story, where do I send it? I thought, you know, just a place, one place to send all your different stories to, that you could get an honest opinion on, no matter what you write. Well, I mean, we do have our limits.
What would your limits be?
Well, I guess anything involving children, but then, you know, we've done stories like that, but I guess it's the way it was written, and we're not into it for shock value.
What would you say is your personal favorite style or kind of writing?
Oh, you know what? I like them all. I can get into every different narration, every different story. It doesn't matter if it's a Western, sci-fi. If I really like to put the story down and think that I've met the character. I think that the character can really, really make a story.
So how do you decide on your editors? How do you seek them out? Do they come to you? What sort of backgrounds do you look for?
Well, to tell you the truth, most of our editors we find after we've published them. We only publish what we love, so a good writer can recognize another good story. If they know how to write one, they know how to see one. So usually we'll email them up, ask them if they're interested in joining the group, and I think that's how we've gotten 80% of our editors. They've been published.
Have you been surprised by any responses to the magazine, either in a positive way or a negative way?
I'm surprised how many of my older relatives love reading it. That really surprised me. I've got a couple of fans, you know, upwards of 80 years old. And I thought this was the kind of magazine that I best to keep away from them. So that really surprised me.
Tell the audience, in essence, what the 69er contest is.
Well, that's a contest where the artist has to come up with a complete story that is exactly 69 words long. And it's a real challenge. I mean, you can come up with a great story, you count the words out, it's 89 words, and you've got to edit, and go back, and you find out it's only 74 words. It takes a long time to get and make it sound like a story. It has to make sense. It can have dialogue, you know. So what we do is we publish the best that we can find, no set number every issue. We just pick out, all the staff picks out their top favorites. Those top favorites go to print, and then the readers read them and then go online and vote for their favorite. And then the winner gets a gift certificate from Amazon, hopefully to go spend on us.
Would you say you were inspired by any other literary magazines before NFG was born? Did you have any visions in the back of your head as you were thinking about putting this together?
Yeah, I pick up a lot of story magazines, and I can be very critical. Like when I first grouped to design the magazine, I brought a stack of 20 with me and went through them and went, I don't like this, I don't like that, I don't like this, I like this, I don't like this, to give them an idea of all the things I liked and disliked in all the different magazines. But story-wise, I'd have to say Storyteller, I think, has a really good high standard for stories. I haven't been disappointed. There are other few magazines, actually they're not even in business now, where I was hard-pressed to find one that I liked, and I thought, you know, this really encouraged me to start NFG, because I thought, I've seen way better stories than this.
Now, there's a lot of conjecture about what NFG stands for, and very little posted about it. Are you able to tell us?
I knew this was coming.
Of course.
Now, see, if I told you what it stood for, you'd have to come work for us.
That's the hazing.
And, you know, when that happens, you almost have no time to write for yourself anymore. So, we just let our readers decide what it stands for.
Very good.
It keeps the mystique going.
I think you should have a contest for people to decide what they want it to stand for.
Yeah, we've talked about this. It's a running thing for the last, you know, NFG, technically, the group will be 3 years old this October. And from the day we started, we knew that was the first thing. Okay, what are we going to tell people what it stands for? Because it came about during a little hissy fit I had after being rejected so many times in 1 week by form letters. So we've never uttered it since. But we like just to keep the guessing game going.
Where do you see NFG going, heading, moving in the future?
If it keeps going the way it's going, I'll have to get a real office. But I'm hoping it'll just fly off the shelf. I want new readers out there. It's not just the writers who are picking up the magazine. I want real readers picking it up. People who don't normally read, you know, that can pick it up and just get introduced to the short story again, or the novel, or the book. I think the whole industry, book and magazine, has just been falling downhill in the last couple of years. People just don't do as much. I guess, who knows, they're online more, they're reading e-books, I don't know. But I'd like to see the introduction of reading back with, you know, starting with us flying off the shelf.
You have a vision that short stories can lead people to read more in general, other books, other literature.
Oh, I think so. I mean, I've gone months sometimes, you know, before the magazine, where I didn't have a chance to read myself. Too busy. You know, you pick up a book, you start reading, and it's like, oh, wow, I forgot how good it was. You know, how you can get sucked into a small fantasy just even for a few moments. Short stories or the whole novel. You know, it's a great feeling when you're, you know, when you're lost in something like that. You can escape and read and, you know, really enjoy a book.
Cher O'Brien, editor of NFG Magazine. You're listening to Word by Word. I'm your host, Jordan Rosenfeld. Now, an excerpt from a story featured in NFG Magazine titled You Go by Alicia Gifford.
You like your life. Ducks march in a row. You reach a certain age, but you're strong, healthy. You've got food, shelter, clothing. You have insurance and important papers. You don't have a man in your life, and you admit nothing. The phone rings. It's Val, your younger sister. She wants you to meet her boyfriend's older brother, who just moved to L.A. from Chicago. Early 50s, attractive in an Ed Harris kind of way, she says. Don't think of it as a setup. No big deal. Can you come for dinner tonight? Say, tonight? I have plans tonight. Be convincing. Don't lie. You told me an hour ago you were going to rent some sappy video. Swept Away, the original. I want to see it again. Watch it tomorrow. Geez, come on, Amy. It's just a casual, no big deal get-together. Sisters and brothers. Be here at 7. Low like a cow. Put your hand on your forehead and feel for a fever. Rack your brains for another excuse. Say, oh, well, while you think of something, anything. See if you can change your attitude. Worry that you are getting reclusive and weird. Shower and blow dry your hair. Inspect your face with a 3x magnifying mirror and tweeze a few dark bristly hairs from your chin. Put on your makeup and contact lenses. Dress casually. Jeans, a white t-shirt, a black blazer. Sandals. Look at yourself in the mirror and think, not bad. Say to yourself, you go, and mean it. When you're leaving, stop by another photograph. Feel the familiar wince when you see your baby standing in a field of wild irises. For the zillionth time since he died, wonder what he'd look like today, who he'd be. Step outside and smell the ocean. See the riot of color and lights at the Santa Monica Pier. Feel the warmth radiate from Gary's body next to you. Nice view, Gary says. Quintessential California. So, how long have you been a widower? You ask. 2 years, he says. Stare out at the abyss of the ocean, the phosphorescent tumble of waves. I had a kid, but he died. He died when he was 3. He'd be 16 now, learning to drive. That's awful, he says. Much worse than a spouse. You feel woozy. You might barf. Tell him, I need to lie down. Go inside and flop on the sofa. Note that Val and Huey are still in the kitchen. He offers to get you some coffee or water, but you feel much better just lying down, getting some blood into your head. He pulls up a chair. It blindsides me now and then, you tell him. To the inside of your cheek, let your mind drift to the dark side of your brain. You hope he'll call, but if he doesn't, you won't be surprised. It's enough to know there's something still inside of you that's willing, something yet unspent.
An excerpt from a story featured in NFG magazine titled You Go by Alicia Gifford.